ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present the Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of the Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what a base down. Hey, how we doing?
Bees Blank, I'm Branham. It's Brian behind the glass. It is a Taco Tuesday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. We have a busy show, Cash 'em or Trash 'em. We like to do that on Tuesdays. A lot of Texan stuff going on. A lot of stuff that I got to get off my chest when it comes to things that are happening around the sports world. Of course, film don't lie. We'll get to that as well. I feel a lot of people are down on the Houston Texans, and rightfully so. 16-point lead at the half. Context matters. How you lost the game against one of the best teams in the NFL. That absolutely matters. So I understand where everybody's coming from. But there's reasons why I'm not quitting the Houston Texans, and they're mostly on the defensive side of the football. But look what they do against some of the better quarterbacks in the NFL. Look at what they've done against some of the teams that they faced so far this year. You go past this past weekend, Jared Goff was leading one of the best offenses in the NFL. He went 15 for 30 with 5 interceptions. That's a good day defensively. Anthony Richardson stinks, but Anthony Richardson, 10 for 32, an interception. You got him benched for a bum and basically ruined that franchise. Jordan Love, 220 yards, meh. 3 touchdowns, pretty good, but 220 yards, meh. It took him 33 passes to get there, and you intercepted him twice. Josh Allen, 9 for 30, 131 yards. He might win the MVP. 9 for 30, 131 yards. Trevor Lawrence, yes, he's a bum, but 18 for 33, 169 yards. You're 7th in the league in sacks. You're 3rd in pressure rate. On top of that, you're 2nd in defensive DVOA. You're 3rd in total defense. And because you have this defensive line, I think that you can play with anybody in the NFL, and you at least have a puncher's chance because of that defensive line specifically.
Well, and I think the other thing, Jeremy, is something that we were concerned with across the board with this team when we started the season, and that's depth. And when you look at the depth of the defense in particular, and you look at the fact that you had guys that at the start of the year and when training camp happened, you're like, well, Mario Edwards, he's over the hill and he's just going to be a camp body. He's probably not going to make the team. And the first 4 weeks, he was playing out of his mind, and now he's suspended, but he's going to come back. And the fact that they have a rotation now, because we were wondering how they were going to use Autry along with Hunter and Will Anderson Jr. Will Anderson Jr. goes down, Autry fills in, and you've got pass rush still, and you've got the ability to put, you know, a pressure on the quarterback and wreak havoc in the backfield. And then when you talk about the guys they signed on the defensive line, and you look at the guys like Settle and Foley, and guys you're like, eh, you know, I personally thought Reeder and the guys that they had a year ago, Rankins, I thought those guys were better, and I wasn't sure what they were going to do, because we heard that D'Amico out of his mouth was, we're going to improve our run defense and our interior defensive line. I'm like, did they really do that? But then when you see the way that they were able to play, they played better. Azeez El-Shaair, better than what we had a year ago. Then you go out and even at Toto, is a guy we weren't expecting much from. He's better than he was a year ago, even with Christian Harris out. Now you add White, and we're like, well, in a couple weeks, maybe he's just depth, and we'll see if he can contribute at all. And he's contributing. And even at the other corner spot, when we were wondering about if Okuda was going to be the guy that was going to start, and now you look at Lassiter, and you look at the way that they move Petrie, and the fact that the safeties aren't great, but they're okay, except for Bullock, who's a guy that you really can bank on. There is depth and there is talent across the board on this defense, which should excite you because, especially as it specifically relates to the Lions game, they were wreaking havoc all night long. And yeah, everybody's going to say, well, at the end, they couldn't stop. Not many teams can stop Gibbs. Not many teams can stop this Lions offense. You held them to about half the points they were averaging in the last several games.
For me, it's because you can wreak havoc on a quarterback, because that is a very important thing to do from the defensive side of the ball. Like whenever we look at the offense right now for the Houston Texans, they're like, what is ailing them? What is going wrong? And there's a bunch of different things, but it's like your quarterback play for many different variables, play calling, protection, injuries to the wide receiver, a lot of quarterback play by itself. There are a lot of variables that go into the production of the position. But that's the most important position in all of football. That makes an offense go. So if you can have these kind of days in the NFL against some of the better quarterbacks, where Jared Goff, who's been unbelievable, goes 15 for 30 and 5 interceptions, or Josh Allen, who's one of the favorites to win the MVP, goes 9 for 30 for 131 yards, because you can get into the face of the quarterback that you're facing. And you can do it, quite frankly, because your defensive line's really good. You can do it with a four-man rush. You can do it with Danielle Hunter. Like, Will Anderson didn't even play in the game against the Lions. He's going to help you. I promise you that the reigning defensive player of the month, it would help the Houston Texans. So, look, the Texans are nowhere near their potential. They haven't played anywhere near their potential. I'm not even telling you that they're going to get to their potential. Maybe this is just who they are offensively, a middle-of-the-pack offense that's incredibly disappointing considering the expectations we had for them. But I'm telling you right now, their defensive line might be the best in the NFL. It's one of the best in the NFL. And you can see it, the proof's in the pudding, based on how they make these quarterbacks struggle and these really good quarterbacks struggle. So I think that they have a puncher's chance against anybody that they play. Now, do they need to play an A-plus game if they ran into the Chiefs or the Ravens in the playoffs? Of course, everybody would. But because their defensive line can make a quarterback's life miserable, I think they have a puncher's chance against anybody they play.
Well, you think about it. If you're playing quarterbacks that are of that grade and that skill level, all it takes is one game. It's not a three-game series. If you get in and you're able to do that against a good quarterback and a good team in a playoff situation, you're giving yourself more than a puncher's chance if you can slow them down and have the effectiveness you've had against several of the quarterbacks that you mentioned. So I think that that's encouraging all in itself. The depth, the talent, the ability to have standout guys at almost every level of the defense, and then to have the track record you've already shown playing good offenses and good quarterbacks. On the flip side, people call me crazy, but when you start talking about the fact that Joe Mixon, until he got hurt, and see if you notice a narrative here, but until he got hurt, Joe Mixon was having one of the better seasons as a running back in the NFL. Mm. And oh, by the way, going into the game, he was third in terms of, you know, yards per game. Then when you look at it, Nico Collins, until he got hurt, was the best receiver in football and was putting up massive numbers. So you've got talent there, running back and at wide receiver, and even with Diggs. And I think that it all starts with the offensive line, because of the fact that I still believe in C.J. Stroud, too. So if they can just somehow find a way to just put a Band-Aid on it and make shift this offensive line, this offense can still score points. We saw it in the first half Sunday night.
Yeah, you're talking about like reaching their potential, which I'm with you. Like, if those things hit, now you reach your potential, and we'll see how it goes, and you have, you know, well, you're 6-4 right now, so you have 7 games left to figure it out, and then hopefully you're lucky enough to get into the postseason. You're lucky enough to get into the tournament, lucky enough to get into the dance and try to make a run. But if there's one thing that I would hang my hat on right now, like, let's say the playoffs started tomorrow, what is the one area that you feel gives you your best chance to win a football game? And for me, it's by far the defensive line. And you're not getting the quarterback play that you want, that you think that you need to win in the NFL or win critical games in the postseason or win consecutive games in the postseason. But your defensive line is limiting what the opposing quarterback is doing, to where if they have a bad day, and the Texans have shown that they're more than capable of having a quarterback have a bad day, a good quarterback, Goff and Allen, then they can go out and win that specific game. So if the Texans were playing a playoff game tomorrow and you were to say, well, you have to risk your life on one specific area of this football team, what would it be? For me, it's easily the defensive line. I'm curious what other people think. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. I do think that the corner play helps that, because if you can defend and you can cover, then it allows the defensive line more time, all of those things. You spoke to the depth of the team. That's one area where I don't love the depth. Like, Kamari Lassiter went off and they had to go to Kadir Holloman, and it's like, uh-oh, that's a massive drop-off. Hopefully Akuda's back and we can see Akuda actually play a little bit of defense this year. I still think that's a significant drop-off. But one area of this football team that you think is the best, I don't know how the answer is not defensive line.
Well, and also, remember when we talked about it even from the start of the season, but ironically, it was starting with the coaching staff that was talking about, hey, the defense is ahead of the offense. Hey, in training camp, the defense has been outplaying the offense. Well, we were like, yeah, okay, but that's going to change. Well, it hasn't. We've said throughout the season that the calling card for this team has been the defense. And the offense at times has been good, but that's why I highlighted the guys on offense. Because we talked yesterday, we've never seen the perfect storm hit where the running game and the passing game are clicking basically at the same time, and they're clicking on all cylinders. But on the times where you just have one, the running game or the passing game, that can be enough when your defense plays to the level that they're capable of playing.
Yeah, they have to step up offensively, though. Like, I don't think there's anybody who would say, like, if we ask the question, what is the strong suit of this team? What is the one area that you think could be one of the best in the entire NFL? 713-780-ESPN. Defensive line, they're right there. Defensive line, they're right there with anybody in the NFL. I think that I would stack up the Texans' defensive line with just about anybody in the NFL. Linebackers, nah, probably not. Maybe if you had Harris and Aziz, that's different, but you don't. You haven't had Christian Harris all year, so I can't do the ifs and buts. You haven't had him all season. The corners, I like the cornerback duo, but do I like it more than the defensive line? No. Safeties, you're not saying that. Stroud has played nowhere near what we thought he was going to play. You know, running back has been fine, but it's kind of a one-headed monster, and it's kind of been iffy, and he's been hurt. Receivers you thought would be, but Nico's been hurt. Diggs has been out for the year. Tank, a lot of people thought, underproduced in the first few games when both of those guys were healthy. Schultz hasn't been that good, and the offensive line's probably been the weakest point of the Houston Texans. I don't think there's another answer. I think it's an obvious, clear-cut, the strongest position group on this football team is defensive line, and it probably should be. You drafted Will Anderson number three after you traded up for him, won Defensive Rookie of the Year. You signed Daniil Hunter to a big two-year contract. You did change some pieces in the interior defensive line, like you said, that you had some questions, you had some wonders, but Foley's been good. Settle's been good. Mario Edwards has been good. This Tungan guy that they picked up from the practice squad looked pretty good to me whenever I was watching the film earlier today. So I don't think that there's any other answer. Is there any other position groups that even contend?
Does quarterback count?
I don't think quarterback's even close. CJ Stroud's playing nowhere near like a top 10 quarterback.
No, I mean,
you're going on potential.
Well, but yeah, and talent. I mean, I still think that the talent is there. There's no doubt that because of all the factors we've talked about, that the production is way down and the performance is down. But it doesn't stop me from believing that this guy is still one of the top 10 quarterbacks in this league, and that on a good day, or when, you know, when he's got protection, that he can be higher than that.
Yeah, for sure. But that's going on expectation, that's going on potential, and that's going on, like, you know, what you think of him going forward. And I agree. Like, I think CJ Stroud has top five quarterback potential. Is he playing like a top five quarterback right now? No. And there's a lot of variables, again, that go into quarterback production. If you put CJ Stroud on a high school football team, the Milby Buffaloes, he's going to have struggles. He's going to have a very difficult time. You put an average quarterback on the best offense in the NFL, then they're going to shine. Like, that might be Jared Goff. Like, Jared Goff's playing like a top five quarterback, unless he's going up against the Houston Texans. Do we think Jared Goff is one of the top five quarterbacks from a talent perspective in the NFL? I don't.
Brian does. He thinks he's going to win the MVP.
That's different, because that's talking about the production of the player. That's talking about the production
I'm just
because of the offense that he's built around. And sorry for the stray, Milby Buffaloes. The defensive line to me is easily clear-cut the best position group that they've put on tape this year. Because I agree with you with Stroud. Like, Stroud could be a top-five quarterback, but they haven't put that on tape. 6927, I said at the beginning of the season that DeMeco set up the defensive line similar to how the Giants set up their D-line for all those Super Bowl runs. I don't think that's a bad call. Mm-hmm. That's the name of the game in the NFL. Like, if you get really good quarterback play, you have a really good chance to win. See Pat Mahomes. If you have a defense that can ruin the day for quarterbacks, you're going to have really good defensive performances. And that's right now the best chance for the Houston Texans to win.
Bears, Broncos, Ravens, those are the type teams when they got to a Super Bowl, those weren't led by offensive, you know, juggernauts. Those were led by teams that had a defense that was able to absolutely win a game almost single-handedly by themselves without a ton of offensive production. When you think about it, the comparison to the Giants is good because you had Tuck on the inside, you had Strahan on the outside, you had, you know, solid run stoppers in the middle, you had guys across the board. You know, San Francisco used to have that kind of line, and then with cap casualties, they had to kind of get creative and move some guys. But when you look at it, Autry's a guy you can move around. When you've got Anderson and you've got Hunter on the outside, they can control the edge and they can get after the quarterback. The inside guys are just absolutely just blobs, you know, stalking up the run and getting back in the backfield. They're capable of being as staunch as any D-line in this game, and they are capable of winning games.
Yeah. Is there another position group on this team that can rival the Texans' defensive line? 713-780-ESPN. 6043 said Stroud had protection this week, crapped the bed. I think the protection was better, but I'm not going to sit here and say that Stroud's protection was fantastic. That said, Stroud did crap the bed in the second half. I think he choked in the second half. 713-780-3776. Busy show. Cash them or trash. And we'll get into the Rockets. Rockets, another big win. I say they're rolling to start the season. That might be too strong of a word, that they're rolling, but they're playing well. Film don't lie. We'll hand out game balls today, too, after the conclusion of Week 10 after Monday Night Football yesterday. 713-780-3776 on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975, on YouTube at ESPN Houston, on Twitter at ESPN975. Blankers at Pac-Man Joel. Brian's at Sacked by BMAC. I'm at Jeremy Branham. First half, second half. What is the problem? What is going on with the Texans between the first half and the second half? I wanted to see what it looked like last year. Is this something that is is there a correlation here? Is it a continuation from a year ago, or is this kind of just an anomaly? Well, you have to find out next. It is the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. We're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
713-780-ESPN. 3772, why do the Texans continue to struggle scoring points in the second half? I shouldn't have gone to bed at halftime.
One of those guys.
How do you go to bed at halftime in Sunday Night Football if the Texans are your team? It just doesn't make sense to me. Doesn't make any sense to me. How old are you? 70? 6602, Aaron Glenn made some absolute great adjustments for his Lions defense for the second half. That is true, but this has been a problem all year for the Houston Texans, not just Detroit. I am very happy for Aaron Glenn, though. Grew up in the Humble-Aldine area, went to Nimitz, went to Texas A&M, was, an original Texan. So I am happy for the success that Aaron Glenn is having. I'm sure he'll be a head coach next year.
I was just going to say, the next step for Aaron Glenn is going to be a head coach in this league next season. There's no doubt.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of candidates, though. Like, it depends on how many jobs come open, because I'm hedging what I say here, because Aaron Glenn, Ben Johnson will both be candidates. Do you think Brian Flores gets the head coaching job? He'll be out there at least as a candidate.
I think he'll get a candidate. He'll get interviews. I'm not sure with everything else that's going on. I'm not sure he's going to get a job.
Same. I would have Glenn more likely than Flores, but there's going to be
a pretty good list. Is that just because of the lawsuit?
Yeah.
And because his tenure as a head coach was pretty mediocre.
And I would also add to the conversation as far as, like, will these guys get jobs, specifically Flores and Aaron Glenn. I think we have also seen a trend of, on the most part, over half the time, teams are hiring offensive guys, especially if they have a young quarterback. So that is also playing against them. I don't know how many. I mean, D'Amico, I mean, obviously it was the defensive guy that got hired. But for the most part, it feels like more offensive guys than defensive guys are getting hired right now as head coaches.
I would say the bigger thing, too, is think about where Aaron Glenn is right now. And these guys are getting a little pickier now to not just take the first job that comes available, taking a job that's the right fit for them. To your point, Brian, maybe he's looking for, if he's going to coach the defense as well, that he's going to want a team that's ready to play now or have defensive players. But look, Ben Johnson turned down jobs 2 years in a row. I think Aaron Glenn could possibly be picky because he knows he's in a great spot where he doesn't have to leave Detroit unless it's the right opportunity.
It's dangerous, though.
It is.
Look what happened to Bobby Slowick.
Yep.
Or Eric Bieniemy. 0002, Bobby Slowick will not be a head coach candidate, true or false? I would go true. I don't think anybody's hiring Bobby Slowick.
No way. Mm-mm.
His offense is in the middle of the pack in the NFL, and many people expected it to be potentially top five. So, yeah, it's been a disappointing season. C.J. Stroud's numbers between his rookie year and his sophomore year have gone down. So the arrow's trending down for Bobby Slowick. I would be stunned if he were a head coach in the NFL next year. I'd be stunned if he were the offensive coordinator for the Texans next year.
Ooh.
What are the chances he's the offensive coordinator for the Texans next year?
Ooh, that's a good question.
I'm still like 70-30.
I still expect him. If he doesn't get a head coaching job, I would expect, and D'Amico seems to be a really loyal guy to his guys anyway, but I think especially it's going to come down to CJ. If CJ's still comfortable with Bobby Slowick,
you're asking your third-year head coach to decide the fate of your offensive coordinator? D'Amico's doing that?
I don't think D'Amico's making a switch. I think that if there's synergy between Bobby and CJ, they can work. You look what he's done with everything else, including when the offensive line was even more in shambles than it is now. We'll work it out. We'll handle it internally. It's a great. It's a question definitely worth thinking about discussing. But I think D'Amico will bring him back.
But do you think D'Amico would ask CJ Stroud his input? Like you make the decision, CJ. He might ask his input, but yeah.
Yeah, I definitely don't think he'd ask him for his input.
Probably, but there's no way. I'm not sure that he would. If D'Amico is determined 100% sure that he's going to bring Slowick back, I don't think he would ask Stroud. Because if you ask Stroud and Stroud says no, and then you bring back Slowick anyways, now you're between a rock and a hard spot.
You are, but at
now
the
you've
same time,
done to him what pissed off Deshaun Watson about hey, what do you think of the GM and then not taking his advice?
It depends on where D'Amico's at in the thought process. If he's 60-40, he's willing to bring Bobby back, and then he asks CJ, and CJ's like, no way, then I think he would make the switch. But if D'Amico was 100% sure he's bringing Bobby Slowick back next year, I don't think there's any chance he's asking CJ.
I think that there is. I think that he's discussing it. Maybe he would make it more about discussing it with key members of the offense.
But what's the point if you're 100% sure?
Because now maybe you find out something that you didn't know. Maybe you find out that Mixon and or Nico or other guys had their issues. I mean, you see what happened in Chicago, and basically it was that Eberflus first and foremost came out and said, I'm sticking with my guys, and the coaches are going to continue to do what they're doing. And then all of a sudden, I guess they said 6 to 8 of the guys, members of the offense or more, came to the GM's office and the head coach and said, we want to change, and that's when they fired him. So I think that when you're talking
– I don't think that's apples to apples, though, because I think Eberflus would have really liked to fire Waldron. So he wasn't 100% sold on him. If you're 100% sold on a guy, you're not going to go ask other people their input, I don't think.
But if CJ's not happy, and because you know he's your franchise quarterback, and you know you want him here long term, I do believe that that's a conversation that would happen.
Yeah, it'd be
it feels like you're saying, Joel, that even if D'Amico's 100%, he'd be willing to be talked out of that position if CJ voiced a strong opposition.
Yeah.
I think that there's a chance that the way it could play down is he leaves the season, or he walks away from the final game of the season thinking, I still want Bobby to be my OC. But at the end of the year, when you have those end-of-the-year meetings with each player and you talk to guys on the offense, if you find out there's an overwhelming consensus that there's issues with Bobby Slowick, then it's something you got to reevaluate.
That's probably not 100% sold on the guy, though. That's probably closer to like 75, 80, maybe a little bit closer to the fence than, you know, just determined that he's back no matter what. 8341, I think he's walking a fine line on either being here or being gone. Depends on how the season ends. It's probably true. It's probably a season on the brink for Bobby Slowick.
Thank you, Mr. Feinstein.
Yeah, good book. 6043, is it a Bobby problem or CJ problem? Because I lean towards CJ being the problem.
I don't. I think you would have a whole lot less to say about CJ Stroud if he was given the ample time to throw the football. If he wasn't constantly looking over his shoulder and getting happy feet, knowing that he's been drilled way too much this season.
So is that a Bobby problem or an offensive line problem?
I think it's both. I think it's the offensive line and it's Bobby before I would start pointing a finger at CJ.
I think it's all intertwined. I think that they're all part of the eventual result. I would put more weight on the offensive line than Slowick and then Stroud, but they all have some fault. They all have some blame. They're all part of the, you know, the final result. 8240, Brandon T. Hopefully the Texans next three games, they take them like they should. I do think they will surprise the fans and beat either the Chiefs or the Ravens. Those teams might be resting some starters at that point of the year. That's a little early,
Maybe the Chiefs, because they're 9-0.
A little early. Probably the Chiefs more than the Ravens, you're right. Because the Ravens aren't even in first place in their
division.
Playoffs started this week, the Texans would be hosting the Ravens as in a 4-5 matchup.
And then which one is the, let's see, they play Baltimore after Kansas City. So Kansas City's not resting starters in week 16.
So it's Miami, KC, Baltimore. To finish the season.
No,
well, then there's a division game in the last week of the season.
And then Tennessee.
Yeah, so the four games after the bye, home for Miami, at Kansas City, home for Baltimore, at Tennessee.
Okay.
So Kansas City's not resting starters
in week
16.
With three games left? No.
No, yeah. So I'll take that back. I recant. 713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Troy and Crosby, you're in the Hive. What's up, Troy?
Hey, what's going on, guys? Hey, I haven't written the Texans off this year, but I was just wondering what you would think if, thinking about the draft, if they used their first two draft picks on the offensive line, because I think everybody agrees the defensive line is pretty short up. Do you think with your second round pick you could get a starting offensive lineman in the second round? I'll hang up and listen.
Appreciate you, Troy. Always good to hear from you. Look, I think there's no doubt. I think when you start talking about where a lot of offensive linemen are drafted, you can find good offensive linemen that were drafted lower than that. I think you look at Juice Scruggs, whether the jury's still out or how you feel about Juice Scruggs, you got Juice Scruggs in the second round, and he was penciled in to start immediately. I think you can find guys that can be starting defensive linemen in the draft. Don't let Nick pick one in the first round and expect big things. But, I think it's definitely a possibility.
The Texans drafting offensive linemen hasn't been that fruitful. You mentioned Juice Scruggs. Juice Scruggs is the weak link on this offensive line. Either he or Shaq Mason, and let's not forget they moved Juice Scruggs because they don't love the coverage calls he's putting them in. Prior to that, this last draft, you drafted Blake Fisher. How many games has Blake Fisher started for you? So, like, Troy's asking how many of those guys are going to start for you. Well, Blake Fisher was literally drafted in the second round and has not started a game. Now, should they have drafted a tackle or should they have tried to shore up their interior offensive line? But how about the first rounder that Nick Caserio drafted in Kenyon Green, who was the weak link before the weak link? He's your weak link's favorite weak link. So I don't know. Like, you should. You should. Is Nick Caserio going to draft starters with his first two picks on the offensive line? Track record's not good for Nick Caserio in that department.
That comes down to the talent evaluation more so than the question to Troy. Can you get a starting offensive lineman in the second round? Yes, you absolutely can. Now, can Nick Caserio do that? That's a different question. Because you're right. I mentioned Kenyon Green, and we talked about Juice Scruggs. Look, he found a guy like Patterson on the flip side in the sixth round, I think it was, and he has been really, really steady for you. And he's been a huge shot in the arm when you needed one for depth and for the ability now to start at two different positions. But when you look at it overall, you should be able to do it. If you're Nick Caserio trying to do it, it might be a different story because Kenyon Green's been an absolute bust and Juice Scruggs has been less than. I think in the case of Fisher, they drafted him thinking this year was going to be basically a work in progress to get him ready and more experience to play. But at the same time, you're right. I don't feel confident putting him out there.
Yeah, I think it's fair to ask the question, too, if that's the right call. Like, should you be treating second-rounders with the mindset of you want them to groom and develop for a year whenever you only get them for four? You only get them for four.
You do, but at the same time, you're banking on the fact you just spent a whole boatload of money on your right tackle and he's supposed to be playing above average, and then you find out he's playing below average.
I could make the argument, though, that's even worse because if you're spending the financial resources to pay a right tackle, and now you're combining a draft resource to be the backup for that right tackle, it's a double whammy.
But I think you did it because at the time when you signed him to the contract, you thought that he was going to be what you thought he was going to be. Now, when you get to the draft a year later and you realize we might have swung and missed on this one, how do we bail as soon as possible? Well, we get a guy that in a year's time should be ready to replace him if we want to let him walk.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I just don't know if that's the best strategy. Because you look at some of the other offensive linemen that were drafted in the second round, and it's like, okay, I could have used some of these guys. These guys might have been instant starters for
you. It might not be a strategy. It might be a quick bailout procedure?
Well, I think it's strategy. Okay.
It's just reacting on the fly when you know
it's a decision.
That
it's a game plan. I do think that ultimately that is the game plan. I do think that this is Titus Howard's final year at the Texans, and Blake Fisher will be your right tackle next year. But should you be doing that with a second rounder? 713-780-ESPN. I sent out a tweet today. The approval rating of Bobby Slowick. I'm curious to see what you guys think it would be and what it actually is. And let's dive into the numbers here. Bobby Slowick last year, first half, second half, is it consistent with what we've seen this year? 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Guys, a word for my good friends at Stella Rosa Wines. We know that you guys are constantly watching sports, and there's a lot of football on these days, and a lot of times you're going to have everybody come over to your place to watch some football. And when you do that, you want to make sure that everything is there for your guests. The food and the drink matter. They're very important. So regardless of what you serve to eat, it's also extremely important what you serve on the beverage menu. You can do the beer and the hard liquor, but consider some Stella Rosa wines. They're served chill. They have this is the exact right amount of alcohol. You don't have to pace yourself as much because you're not going to get hammered on one or two glasses. They are absolutely delicious, all natural fruit flavors with a little bit of spice, and they complement everything that you serve from a food perspective. Next time you're at your local retailer while you're getting everything else for the party, grab a couple bottles. Check them out. Give them a try. See how the people react, and you might be the hero of the party regardless because people are going to love them. Next time you're visiting someone else's party, why don't you bring some along just to absolutely kind of take a different approach to all the options for beverages and look like a hero to your hosts. And out there as well is the fact that Stella Rosa Wines know how much you love sports and you love college football. They're giving you a chance to win tickets to the biggest college football game of the season. All you got to do is go to ESPNLADreamTicket.com and enter for your chance to win two tickets to the biggest game of the season. Stella Rosa, found at your local retailer. Remember to enjoy it chilled and always celebrate responsibly.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Live in the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees. Now back to Joel and Jeremy.
Thank you for turning down the air conditioning, Brian. The talent can't bother to go turn down the thermostat. So appreciate you doing that. Hot takes in here. I asked my followers on Twitter, at Jeremy Brennan, Do you approve of the way that Bobby Slowik is handling his job as the offensive coordinator of the Houston Texans? Look, we just got done with a election season. So approval rating here for Bobby Slowik. What do you guess the approval rating is? There's been 332 votes so far. Not that that matters,
15%.
I guess. 15%, yes. The approval rating is doing a good job. All right, Brian, where are you at on this?
I think it's going to be more negative recency bias. I'm going to say it's around 40.
That would be more positive.
Yeah, it would.
By a long shot.
No, approval rating of 40 is more negative. Didn't Joel say 50?
No, he said 15. 11. He said 15.
Oh, 15. God, I misheard
like,
him.
I was like, what in the world?
No, I misheard Joel. No, but I stand by. Okay, it's obviously not more negative then, but okay. I'll stick with my number at 40.
The approval rating for one Bobby Slowik is 11.4%.
Ouch.
Yikes.
11.4% of people think that Bobby Slowik is handling his job as the offensive coordinator of the Houston Texans well, or they approve of the way that he is handling the job. So is the patience of the city getting thin on Bobby Slowik? Without a shadow of a doubt. There's no doubt. I see people on the timeline saying that they should fire Bobby Slowik. People were reacting to the Shane Waldron news whenever he got fired earlier this morning as the offense coordinator of the Bears. People on the timeline were saying that Bobby Slowik should be next. So they're calling for his job. There's only 11.5% of people that approve of Slowik's handling of the OC job right now for the Texans. Bobby Slowik is public enemy number one.
There's no doubt about it. And it's always the recency bias, and it's always the what have you not done for me lately that stands out for people. But at the same time, when you look at it with Bobby Slowik, it's not surprising, but it's also ridiculous. I just think that bad teams that are going to, you know, probably going to get worse are the teams like the Bears that end up firing their OC at this point in the season. And I think that when you look at Bobby Slowik, I think it would be a huge mistake to fire him in the middle of the season for people calling for his job. I think it's ridiculous because as much as you could say even last Sunday night that, you know, the second half was awful. Well, the first half wasn't bad, and they were able to at least get points, and they're still having some success. I don't believe in firing Bobby Slowik, and I don't believe there's a change needed at play calling. I just think that philosophically he needs to change some things in the way he calls games and look at a different way to do it. But I think that there's still enough talent, and he's had enough success with a lot of the guys that are on this roster that I don't think it's the kind of move the Texans should make right now.
No, I'm in 100% agreement. I think it'd be foolish, really, for the Texans to make a change at offensive coordinator at this moment. Now, the big frustration that I think fans have is basically the second half. I mean, it's all been a disappointment. The Texans are 15th in total offense. We expected them to be top 10, maybe even flirt being a top 5 team. Their scoring's outside of the top half in the NFL. I think it's 17th, whereas, you know, their total offense is 15th, their total points per game, 17th or 18th, somewhere in that area. If you're a believer in the analytics, their offensive DVOA, I think, slipped to 22, so it's outside of the top 20 in the NFL. So it's been an overwhelming disappointment. But when you look at it specifically first half versus second half, I think that's where a lot of the ire lies whenever it comes to the fan base in the Houston Texans. So I wanted to go back because last year everybody liked Bobby Slowik for the most part. There was a decent minority that, hey, Slowik's overrated, Stroud's carrying him, all these things. I did see that last year. But I wanted to go back and look at last year's numbers and compare them to this year's numbers to see if it was correlation, if it was a trend, if it was an anomaly so far this year. So the Texans so far this season in the first half have scored 14.2 points per game. Okay. That number in the second half slips to 8.2. That's a full touchdown.
Yeah, that's not
touchdowns
bad.
Are still worth 6, right? That's a full touchdown. The slippage from first half to second half for the Texans is a touchdown. That's absurd. That's a crazy number. And, of course, we know the stat. They haven't scored an offensive touchdown in the second half. They haven't scored a touchdown, period, in the second half of the last 4 games, although Tank Dell should have had one. CJ Stroud makes a halfway decent throw. So last year, the Texans in the first half, 11.7 points per game. In the second half, 10.9. So still worse in the second half. Like they are this year, right. But the gap wasn't nearly as big.
No,
how do we make sense of this?
It's the same way when you were talking about the point differential and the fact that, you know, you can get a significant plus rating in the first half and then a significant minus in the second half. You look at it and you start saying, was the batter's eye bad in the second half? Because, you know, I joke about the Astros part of this, but sometimes you're scratching your head going, how does this happen? Is it all simply the fact that they're just not aware of the adjustments coming and then they don't adjust after they see what the adjustments are? Because we know that offensively, we know offensively and defensively, that Rodgers had mentioned during the Jets game, that they adjusted quite a bit at the half, that they were going to do things differently. They wanted to take Joe Mixon away in the second half. They wanted to do some things offensively that they saw with the Texans with the looks they were getting. Is it just that the offense isn't adjusting to what the defense is doing? We knew Quinnen Williams was going to have his way with the majority of the snaps when he was specifically being lined up over Kenyon Green and then his replacements. But overall, it was how they treated the entire defense of the Jets and how they didn't adjust. And
but that's for, I mean, his first half, second, like, they were doing the same thing in the first half, second half against Quinnen Williams.
But I'm saying, then you start thinking about that if they're going to clog the middle more, they're going to try and take away more of the lanes for Mixon, they're going to really force CJ to try and beat him because they knew they were getting pressure off the edges, then Bobby's got to adjust. Does he have to move the pocket? Does he have to roll him out? Does he have to do some things to create some different opportunities than the looks he was getting in the first half, which weren't great, but they were okay, but he didn't have any time either. And I think that where it comes down to me is that we constantly look at these numbers, and what it correlates to is I just don't think there's enough adjustments, whether it be coming out of the locker room at halftime or then once you see what they're trying to do to you and how do you adjust to try and take advantage of other things.
Yeah, I think that that's the biggest difference is that, you know, adjustments happen really series to series. Like, I think Slowik's a good game planner. Watch the first half of the game against the Lions. Like, they're doing some good stuff. They score a touchdown, yes, on a short field in their opening possession, doing some good stuff. The Joe Mixon big pass and run on the second possession. They got him down to the 3-yard line before the Juice Scruggs holding, took him really out of touchdown range and had to settle for a field goal. I think he's a good game planner. I think he has difficulty once the defense adjusts to what he has set. I think he has difficulty kind of going off the fly. I think he has trouble just, like, seeing the game. I saw was the left tackle that filled in for the starting left tackle, Skinner. He went on a podcast. I saw Stressons retweet this, and he was talking about how Ben Johnson saw a play where Skinner got whooped. Like, he whiffed, got beat really, really badly. I don't know which defensive end was on him. And then Johnson was like, hey, do the same thing again. We're going to use that aggression against them. Like, I don't think that Slowik really has that feel where he's here's the thing that they're changing, and this is our counter to the subtle thing that they're changing. Because they're not all of a sudden going to go from, like, a nickel formation to running 3-4. Like, you have a pretty good idea of what you're going to see, but there are these subtle differences that defenses make, and if you're game planning for the defense and you're doing a good job early, they make a subtle change to what you're doing, and then you're not good at reacting off of that. That's why you see these numbers like the second half scoring being down a full touchdown than the first half. I think he has bad in-game feel. I don't think he lets the game talk to him.
No, I think the feel is the biggest thing that I was going to say. The adjective I was going to use is, because I don't disagree with the game planning aspect of it. From a feel standpoint, the one thing I've noticed, we've talked about it previously, I noticed again the other night in the last couple of games with Bobby Slowik. From a feel perspective, it's even the times that he decides to pull out a gadget play. It's like when the offense is finally starting to get a little rhythm, they're starting to click a little bit, they're moving it faster, and then all of a sudden he tries like a double reverse flea flicker or something out of the ordinary that ends up being a loss of 6, 7, 8 yards instead of just kind of continuing to do what you're doing, which is put the defense on its heels and have them be more reactionary than they have been because of the fact you're having success, and it lets all the wind out of the sails, and you're like, okay, now we got to start deep in our own territory. I mean, like 7, 8 yards back from the sticks, looking at a 2nd and 15, 2nd and 17, as opposed to continuing to do, which was matriculating the ball down the field. I believe that that's the issue. It's not about the game planning. It's about the feel. And in game, he doesn't have the touch and the feel for when to do certain things or how to do certain things as it relates to making adjustments.
It's kind of like, not to be super like cheesy and cliche, but it is chess. Like, if you're sitting down and you're playing a match of chess, and I've been known to be called the Branham Gambit from time to time, you're going to adjust based on how your opponent's playing. You can't just go in and be like, this is what we're going to do and be this binary robot, and I'm going to do this move and that move and this move and that move, and then not adjust to your opponent. You have to take what you are seeing and adapt based on that. It's a dance a little bit. You see what the opponent is doing to you, and then you kind of dance off of that. You adjust. You have the counter moves off of that. I think he's kind of robotic. I think he's kind of binary. I think he's really good at seeing what a defense has been doing, game planning against that defense, which leads to these first half numbers being high. And then I think he has a very difficult difficult dime, reading the game, taking the vibes off of that, and then having the little counter moves to their subtle moves to defend them. I think that's what it is. That's my takeaway of what's happened with Bobby Slowik. Here was Slowik asked whenever he was asked last week about first, second half adjustments and all that. Here was the answer from Bobby.
There's no, you know, people like to think there's some secret sauce between the first half, the second half. There's all these adjustments that happen. Everybody makes adjustments. We've talked about it before. You know, you have subtle things that happen within a game. There's not one thing a defense is doing in the second half that's different than what they do in the first half. We're not doing our job as well. And, you know, and that's been an emphasis for us for 3 weeks, and we got to keep straining on it.
All right, I promise you that there are differences. They might not have these wholesale formational differences where you're facing a nickel and then they're running 3-4. Like, okay, I get that part. But to say that a defense from first play to last play is going to basically be doing the same thing without subtle changes based on what you're doing to expose that defense is stupid.
That's a lie.
That was,
well, maybe it's not. Maybe
that
he
was
believes
a scary
this.
Sentence.
Yeah, maybe it's not a lie.
Well,
that's what I'm scared of. Is that
him
it's not a lie?
Statement that's not true. If you
yes,
watch NFL
sure.
football, that's the lie.
But
the
I,
lie is that does yeah. that doesn't
either,
happen.
He either misspoke and right. phrased what he was
I
trying to say
so.
Wrong, or that's a very scary statement.
Then that's where I'm at. Hopefully it's not. Hopefully it was just him, you know, doing the media thing. And I don't really care what people say to the media. Like, it's all kind of overrated, and they're just going to tell you what, you know, sounds good, or, you know, what gets them through the press conference quicker. I don't really put a whole lot of stock into press conference stuff. But if the dude's like, oh yeah, there's no changes for what a defense, it would kind of speak to the numbers, though. It would kind of speak to what the numbers are telling us about this offense.
But then maybe it does speak to the bigger picture of, do you have the right guy for the job, if that's literally how he thinks about something that we all know not to be true. And we're not in any NFL coaching staff, but we can see it. When you watch the games and you watch the film and you see the tape, you realize adjustments are being made, as you said, from series to series, play to play, but more so specifically when you have the time to go into the locker room and have that meeting time and kind of evaluate what you've seen in the first half film, you make changes, you make adjustments, and both teams do it. To say that they're not is ludicrous.
Playing that out a little bit hypothetically, let's say Bobby Slowik meant exactly word for word what he said. Where is he getting that from? Is he getting that from what he sees from D'Amico? Because we've seen, obviously, the Texans, and I mean, the offense gets all the scrutiny. But we've seen the second half against the Jets, they go from 0 points and pop off and score 3 touchdowns. The Lions were completely held down in the first half, pop off, and you can't stop them. If what Bobby Slowik is true, maybe he's getting that from D'Amico's not adjusting or making changes in the second half.
D'Amico would be the first one to tell you that he's not a huge schemer. Like, the D'Amico would say, we do what we do, and we're going to be really good at what we do. Which, I mean, that's fine. Like, I have no problem with that philosophy. But he'd be the first one to tell you that he's not this ultra Bill Belichick scheming type of defensive mind. But you still see these differences even with D'Amico. Like, okay, we're going to pressure a little bit more in this half whenever we're noticing that they are exposing us when we're not sending pressure, or they're exposing us whenever we're doing, you know, formation A or play call A. I think D'Amico has more feel than Bobby.
I think
does.
He's got the feel, and I think that he's shown that from series to series, or maybe just as a trend develops within a quarter, that he will do some things differently, that he will bring looks from different angles, or, you know, do as it relates to the run pass percentages or how they choose to stop him. I think from a Bobby perspective, it's more like, this is the game plan. This is what we set out to do. So this is what we're going to do. And I don't think that whether it's paying more attention to it, not kind of grasping it, seeing it, feeling it, as we talked about, but I just think that's where the complete breakdown happens.
I mean, I hope you're right, but when you look at some of the second halves for the defense, the Lions, the Jets, the Packers, the Bills, there's a lot of Jaguars. There's a lot of second halves where the defense, whether it be because they are or aren't making adjustments in the second sure. half, have had poorer second halves than they did first half.
Well, I mean, the Texans as a team are a bad second half team. And that's both sides of the ball. They're plus 57 in the first half. They're minus 59 in the second half. So the idea that the Texans are a bad second half team solely because of the offense is a myth. That's just fundamentally not true. But if I had to call it based on how I see it, I do think that Slowik is more binary, robotic, worse feel than D'Amico is. But D'Amico's not immune to it either. D'Amico's not immune to the criticism either. We looked at the numbers last week. What were the differences between the halves offensively and defensively? And D'Amico's was greater than Bobby Slowik a week ago. I didn't adjust the numbers this week. But yeah, both play callers are absolutely subject to criticism here. But if I'm going to eye test, I do think D'Amico has more feel than Slowik. Now, that's not saying much. That's like talking about Branham's dance moves. I got more dance moves than Branham. Everybody does.
Yeah, I think that D'Amico's, you know, from the looks he's seeing play to play, I think that he is... he's a lot better at quickly adjusting and reading what he sees. Whereas I think Slowik is more sticking to, like I said, what the theme was and what the game plan was going into the game and saying, hey, I'm hell-bent on staying with what we decided we were going to do this week and not saying, hey, well, they knew what you were going to do. They're trying to take some things away. Adjust so that it's not as easy for them to schematically stop you.
Yep. 8807, Bobby sounding like Bill O'Brien, crying emoji. A little bit. 8410. All right, thank you. And that's enough, Bill. That's enough. Was Slowik calling the second half in 2023 when this wasn't happening? See, that's the thing, is that it kind of was happening. It might have not has. It wasn't as great a discrepancy. This year, they're minus six in the second half. But last year, they were close to minus one. Like, it's smaller, but they were still a worse scoring team in the second half than they were the first. So it still was happening. It's just... it's more magnified this year.
It's still a trend.
It's a greater number.
When it happens in multiple years like that, it's still a trend. You're not on the positive side of that.
No, yeah. It's grown. It's gotten worse. But, yeah, it isn't an anomaly. 0891, Texans are going to have to start scoring 30-plus points in the first half just to win games because they disappear in the second. You might be right. I thought 23 was enough, but I guess so. 0891's right. It's going to have to be 30, not 23.
Well, that takes away from our theory that the defense is really – capable of winning games for them too. I think that when you start playing some of the best offenses in football, it's a different story. But I think that more times than not, your defense is fully capable of doing things to help you win a football game and keep you in it. It's just that, you know, when you have the weapons and the firepower of teams like Detroit, or you're going to see in Baltimore and Kansas City to a lesser degree, you have to, you know, going into that, realizing they're going to score 25 to 30 points.
Mm-hmm. 8807, so much will be covered up, fixed when Nico gets back. Those high leverage throws are going to Schultz right now. Look, the offense will be better, but Nico Collins is still around whenever the offense sputters in the second half. I mean, you're not getting a plus six first half to second half discrepancy just because Nico Collins has been hurt the last five games.
I mean, look, the offensive line doesn't get solved because Nico Collins is back. And whether you say that relates to the passing game of the last several weeks or the running game last week, the fact is that regardless, the offensive line still has to be better no matter if Nico's in there or not. Yes, on the off-script plays, that there's a connection there, undeniably so, that they click a lot better than some of the guys that CJ's been trying to make throws to. But almost every play seems like an off-script play because the offensive line isn't holding their own.
I would argue, though, that Nico helps the offensive line more than Nico helps the gap between first half and second half scoring.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, because, I mean, you can have Nico and still be this great offense in the first half and then not be as good in the second half, and that's happened. That's happened. Like, this hasn't been a problem only in the games that Nico Collins has been out, whether it's the last five games or whether it's the games that Nico Collins was out last year. 0891, definitely not all on Bobby. Stroud played like trash in the second half. See, I agree with this. I agree that it's not all Bobby Slowik. It is a combination of everything. It's a combination of offensive play caller. It's a combination of not having great pass protection or a great offensive line. It's a combination of, yes, the injured receivers. It's a combination of C.J. Stroud not playing well in the second half. It's all of it. Like, it's not one thing.
We looked at some of the throws that CJ made, and yes, it's easy to say the two interceptions were bad. It was bad reads, bad decisions, bad throws. But there were several others throughout the second half that you could highlight, and some to some degree even throughout the game where he started to get a little bit too risky with some of the throws he was making. He started to put the ball behind guys instead of what he normally does when he puts it right on the side of the defender that he needs to put it where the receiver only can make a play on it. He still has a lot of ability, but he's still also dealing with what he's dealt with over the last several weeks, which is every time I get the ball from center, I'm basically getting ready to run for my life in 2 seconds. And so I think that that's altered the way he's played the position in the last month.
4403, worst thing that could happen is if Gerard Johnson leaves to be an OC somewhere else and you are stuck with this issue again next year. That's a fair point. 8341, Nico is back and he starts scoring a touchdown in the second half every game, then we're even Steven. But what if it's the other way? What if Nico comes back and you're scoring that touchdown in the first half, and instead of being even Steven, now you're minus 12 in the second half versus the first half?
Yeah, that's
could go either way.
That's bad. And again, that's something that regardless of Nico back or not back, the offense, if Nico's back, the offense should be better. across the board. But you have to rectify the bigger problem, which is the discrepancy in the fact that no one can really figure it out. That's why I said the batter's eye. No one can really figure out and put a finger on exactly why it's happening unless it is as simple as saying Bobby's not making the right adjustments as the game goes on in the second half. Because otherwise, you got to be able to have some glaring reason, injury, lack of production, a guy not doing his job, what the defense is doing to you, to explain why in the second half they're so blatantly worse than they are in the first half.
713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Whenever we come back, you can weigh in on this, 713-780-3776. Rockets Wizards last night. Rockets are rolling, huh? Would you call what they're doing a roll? 713-780-3776. It's the Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Guys, before we go to the break, we got another big weekend of sports coming up. We've got lots of sports to get into. There's always NBA action now. College basketball starting to heat up. Lots of great matchups on the college side tonight if you're looking for some hoops action. And there's a place that you can bet on it at mybookie.ag. If there's sports on TV, there's a really good chance you can bet on it at mybookie.ag. And they love to take care of you in the process. Like right now, if you're just hearing about mybookie.ag, you want a place that you can sign up so you can bet on games. I encourage you to do it at mybookie.ag because they are the ones that take care of you the best. They are going to make sure when you sign up, whatever you put in, they'll put in the same amount, up to $1,000, as a sign-up bonus to get you started. More money in your account, more games you can bet on, more chances you can win. All you need to do is remember our promo code, which is bet975. Anytime and every time they ask for it or there's a place for it, use it because it's going to be to your benefit and you're going to literally cash in. It's fantastic. And they take care of you because all the sports that you're watching on TV are pretty much available from UFC and golf, soccer, and so much more. And even when there's not games going on or you feel like a little casino games, live dealers are standing by too. So you can play blackjack, you can play poker, and you don't have to go to Vegas or drive to Louisiana. And they also have a tiered rewards program now called MyBookie Plus. When you sign up for the first time, you're already going to be signed up for the program. The more you play at mybookie.ag, the higher you go on the tier scale, and the higher the tiers, the better the rewards for you for being a loyal customer. Check it all out today, and remember what I always say. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere, with the only place I tell you to do it. It's mybookie.ag, and always use our promo code BET975.
ESPN 97.5.
I assumed you knew.